today I was supposed to be having some guests on from New Zealand, Neil and Esther Henderson from climaterealists.org. They're bringing Lord Christopher Monckton to New Zealand later on, so that'll be very nice. In the interim, while we're waiting for them to be connected by the studio, there's a couple of items on the news. And whenever you watch an item on the news, you understand that there's a story that they don't cover, you know, like, for example, the real reason why whatever it is they're reporting is actually happening. They tell you certain things and they don't tell you certain other things. For example, they've told you that New Zealand now has a record number or just a huge amount at the very least of suicides. And they're like, oh, I wonder how this can happen. Why would all these kids who are in the prime of their life and everything commit suicide? Well, you give them pharmaceutical drugs that have suicide as one of the side effects, for one. And you never mention that on the news, do you? You know, you always say, oh, blame the parents. Parents didn't have any idea that their doctor would just give their children something that was so dangerous for such a reason as breaking up with their child or their child breaking up with their first girlfriend or something like that. Isn't it interesting how very, very few people anywhere on earth have a clue about just how many times normal situations, normal life is interrupted by drugs and the establishment educating you to things that are simply not true and have no evidence of any kind backing them up. That's what I'm really concerned about when I hear that suicides being reported. Also, 2 years since the Christchurch quake, and there are people still, basically, it's turning into like ghost suburbs and stuff out there. All right. In 2 years, they've had like tens of thousands of earthquakes or something like that, and they have maybe two shakes a week now that they can still feel. And also, on top of that, despite the fact that the land's kind of, you know, settling down a little bit, and instead of five earthquakes a week, they've got two, a lot of people have apparently started smoking again. And this is interesting because, well, it's amazing just how scary earthquakes can be. And people are smoking in order to relieve the pressure. And the best argument that they can come up with would don't smoke to relieve the pressure is that the long-term health effects might be very bad. However, the short-term stress effects, if you're a smoker or an ex-smoker and you're now not smoking or whatever, and you've got all those earthquakes to deal with, and you've got all those insurance companies that aren't paying for anybody else, and you've got the government financed under Agenda 21 screwing over your entire city and replanning it without your say-so, if you're living in a ghost suburb that's real freezing cold with terrible flash lightning weather and crap that goes on all over the place, you're damn right you should be smoking. Okay. And on top of that, we got record fuel prices to boot. Mm-hmm. Record fuel prices. So in a world in which we literally have unlimited oil, okay, and the oil companies, cartels, etc., they simply buy out all the refineries and all their competition and then cease production so that it forces a bottleneck of the resources and forces up the price. Thank you, everybody. Keep paying those record fuel prices. Don't outfit your cars with anything that might actually make them a little bit more fuel efficient. Just remember, the fossil fuel engine or whatever, fossil fuels, whatever. It's not even a fossil fuel, yo. Okay? You know the reason why they thought it was fossil fuels? It's because in the La Brea tar pits, you can go Google this up, La Brea tar pits in Los Angeles, they've got about basically tar, and I've got my guest Neil here on the line. I'll get to you in a second, but La Brea tar pits in LA, they found that there was a bit of animal bones and plant matter and stuff like that stuck in these tar pits, which is basically oil, right? So they go, oh, okay, well, this oil must be made out of animal bones as opposed to animals that stupidly got stuck in the oil. and it must be also made out of plants and stuff as opposed to plants that were just growing around the oil and there's a few fronds and everything would just drip into it. Same principle as looking at a vodka martini and saying, hey, my God, this vodka martini's got an olive in it. Ergo, the vodka martini is made entirely of olives, including the glass. That's the logic. It's freaking stupid. All right, sorry. Anyway, getting to my guest, Neil Henderson from climaterealists.org.nz, I believe. Are you there, mate?
Yeah, Yep, good morning. Well, it's a good afternoon over there, is it?
What do you mean over there, mate? I'm in New Zealand just like you, brother.
Oh, you are? Okay. That's all righty. I wasn't sure whether it was being linked through to the US.
Well, it is linked through to the US. The studio is in Austin, Texas, where it's about 5:10 in the afternoon there. Will everybody get this? Yeah, so we're catching all the rush hour traffic in Texas at the moment. So why don't you just tell us, Neil, just a little bit about yourself and what it is you do.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm a sheep and beef farmer inland from Gisborne, which is on the east coast of the North Island. Sort of got involved in this climate change stuff. Well, actually, to be honest, going back a little bit, when Kyoto was signed, I was one of those dumb ones that thought, well, yeah, we're putting all this fossil, burning all this fossil fuel and producing all this CO2, so we must be causing a problem. So, yeah, Kyoto is a good idea. And I just listened to the mainstream media like everybody else. And then probably about 2006, 2007, I started to hear a few things that pricked the radar up. And most notably, I heard an interview with who's now the late Augie Au, who was a well-known meteorologist in New Zealand, who pointed out that CO2 is actually not the main greenhouse gas. So I thought, well, if water vapor is the main greenhouse gas, why aren't they jumping up and down about that? And sort of a few things sort of went sideways. And then the next thing is what really got my ears turned right on high volume was the fact that they were going to start taxing the methane from our animals. And my sixth form biology told me that the carbon cycle is balanced. So I thought, well, there's something wrong here, and that's when I started digging a bit deeper. And when I found out quite the extent of how much it was going to cost farmers for these supposed methane emissions, or not just methane, it's methane and nitrous oxide, like, for example, the rules keep changing, but at that stage it was 330 kgs of CO2 equivalent for every sheep we own. So if they started having carbon prices running away to $100 a tonne, which was being talked about at that time, we're looking at $33 for every sheep on our farm every year. And similarly for cattle, is over a tonne. And so that sort of got me quite active, and I sort of started pointing out to a few other farmers around the area. And the first thing I did was sort of a poll of about, well, it's only about 60-odd farmers. And at that stage, we were split evenly sort of between those that agreed that climate change was a problem and it wasn't. But the one question was very, very interesting, is 100% of them agreed that whatever the climate was doing, it was cheaper to live with it than try and change it, which I thought was quite fascinating. So I sort of said to these farmers, well, what are we going to do about this? You know, we can't just sit here and do nothing. Well, that's what I'd be quite happy to do, and sit here and do nothing and let someone else do it. But I basically decided, well, someone's got to do something. So they weren't happy to do a protest march down the main street or get anything active. But they said, well, if I organised a speaker to look at the objects, they'd come along. So I sort of thought, well, who do I get? And at that stage, Ian Wishart had just written Aircon, so I thought, well, he's a good one, but I thought, well, I'm a bit of a small fish to drag someone like him along to Gisborne from about 500 k's away. So I sort of contacted the Climate Science Coalition in New Zealand, and they sort of made positive noises but weren't coming up with anyone. And then meantime, Gareth Morgan, who's an investment guru, runs an investment business, and also who had written Poles Apart with the assistance of a couple of scientists, he came to Gisborne and spoke to a couple of hundred. And basically, just after thinking about that, well, just not long before Gareth Morgan came to Gisborne, he actually was in a live debate on television with Ian Wishart. And at the end of that debate, I should point out that Gareth Morgan, Gareth Morgan wrote his book, and if you read it, a lot of the stuff, you think, well, he's actually on the same side as us. But miraculously, at the end of the book, he comes out and says that climate change is caused by humans. So, yeah, anyway, the short and the long of the interview between Ian Wishart and Gareth Morgan was that they did a poll, a viewers' poll afterwards. People could ring in or text in, and it was overwhelmingly in favour, something like 80% or might have even been higher in favour of Ian Wishart. So I thought, well, yeah, that means he got more. Well, as a matter of fact, Ian Wishart said on the program too, Gareth Morgan, I'm surprised that you come out on the side you do with the evidence you've got in your book. So anyway, I thought, well, nothing lost by getting hold of the Imbushart. And short and long of it, he did come down to Gisborne. He donated his time for free, and we paid his travel and expenses. And sort of we discussed with him before the meeting and said, well, look, what can we do as a result of this? Like, one of the suggestions we had was we put a few papers out on some tables at the back of the room and at the end of the meeting tell people that if they're interested in doing something to fight this, to put their names on the paper. And so that's basically where our Climate Realist Network was born. We got about 200 people at the meeting. 50-odd people from memory put their names on that paper. And we started the Climate Realist Network as a result.
So you're all giant, wealthy industrialists financed by oil companies, obviously.
There's not a cent of money comes from them. Well, basically, we're just doing it out of our own money.
What's funny is the oil companies fund Greenpeace, right? and so many other climate action organizations. It's like they're funding their own resistance so they can control it.
Yeah. Well, we do it ourselves. And that way, if we don't go looking for big money from anyone, we can't be accused of being the mouthpiece of big oil or whatever. We have received some donations from people who like what we're doing, but they're just ordinary people like us. We've printed a few bits and pieces, and the printer is on our side, so he does them at cost, or sometimes he's even done them for free. but they're basically just people who believe in what we do, and we need to get this message out there that is so sadly out of balance.
Are we thinking about just think about this for a moment? The apparatus that is going up, just exactly how can you resist it? I mean, as far as I know, public awareness of this issue is starting to get up there. Like, as you mentioned with the poll on the close-up program with Ian Wishart, and those of which who want to actually listen and watch that one, you can go find that on YouTube. It's on my other YouTube channel, Eastwood Vincent. Just go there and search for Ian Wishart or climate change. Should come up. But what I found interesting about that debate is the difference between the two debaters. Now, Ian Wishart laid out fact after fact and this statistic, that statistic, consistently.
Yeah.
Gareth Morgan went, and we need to do something about climate change, and he played the whole kind of moral card. Like, he had no facts, so he had to do a false morality play, that kind of thing. At least that's me looking at it. I don't think anybody else noticed just how disingenuous his presentation was relative to Ian Wishart. And this is the thing. If you've got somebody who keeps repeating themselves and doesn't keep laying out facts and evidence consistently, they're probably not telling you the whole truth.
Exactly. And it's not just Gareth Morgan that does that. We see it all the time. Like, I mean,
It's the modus operandi of the whole climate cultist movement.
Exactly. The scientists have said so it must be so.
And that's a circular argument because it's a circular argument.
Yeah, that's right. it's a hang of a difficult thing to break through, and I must admit, we're not sort of holding our breath about making major changes, but when people ask us, well, what the heck are you still doing this for? And we say, well, basically, we just know it's wrong. And because we know it's wrong, we've got to stick our heads up and say so. And at least at the end of the day, we'll say, well, we did what we could or tried to do what we could and won't sort of have those regrets. Well, what if I'd done such and such? So, yeah, we're just giving it our all.
Yeah. And a lot of people would call that brave, but the fact of the matter is, Neil, every generation goes through this. There's always some kind of tyrannical scumbag trying to take over, and it's those people who just realise this. Oh, my God, scumbaggery is all over the place, and it's starting to brainwash people, and they're starting to believe stuff that's just plain not true, and they want to enslave us because of the stuff that's not true as well, and economically destroy us, and control every single thing that we do or say in our daily life. And this, that, and the other, so on and so forth. You know, like the nightmare future is a rolling snowball that is simply cannot be stopped, cannot be restricted in size. That's what I see. And as a result, you understand, hold on a second, we're going to build some trenches, we're going to fire some flamethrowers at that snowball right now, all its way down the hill, So by the time it's done its rolling, it'll not be anything but a tiny little snowball that you can pick up and throw back at them. That's how powerful information really is. You can burn down their agenda every single step of the way because they got nothing backing them. There ain't no rock that's solid underneath that snowball. It's all capable of being melted away by you, me, and everybody else. Neil Henderson from climaterealist.org.nz is my guest, and we'll be right back after the break with him. Everybody, we're back live, and we've got Neil Henderson on the line from climaterealist.org.nz.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, excellent. I just made a guess because I figured, you know, he's from New Zealand, he's part of an organization, it's probably .org.nz. I thought it was a pretty logical conclusion. Okay, now, speaking of logical conclusions, if we are talking about climate change, and you acknowledge that climate change is happening, you acknowledge that we do play a part in it, but you don't acknowledge that we're the overriding climate kind of force in the universe kind of thing. There's this giant ball of pulsing light and energy called the sun, and apparently it has something to do with sunrise and sunset, and apparently it affects our weather. So obviously when we talk about the climate changing, we don't look at the sun at all. We just look at exhaust car Oh, my God, the science is bad. And not to mention, isn't it every other planet warming up in our solar system as well?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And, I mean, yeah, I don't know why they... I'd like to know how these other people explain that. I think that some of them say, they just sort of shrug their shoulders, I think. And, they just like to have this monster. Everybody likes this monster to fight, and it's very nice to blame carbon dioxide. It's a bit of a shame that it happens to be one of the most essential compounds in life, but they want to outlaw it and ban it. Just being a bit cynical there. I mean, that's another other thing that sort of makes me realise how off the rails the other side is. They talk, you hear ministers in the government talking about carbon pollution and the polluter must pay. The Greens love that one. Well, even Nick Smith, when I challenged them on it, Nick Smith being our ex-climate change minister until he got removed from office for misdemeanors in another department, I challenged him on it, and he said, well, if you're in an atmosphere of 100% carbon dioxide, you won't live. And I said, yes, but we're not close to that yet. And he said, well, his opinion is we're close enough. When we've got, is it, 0.03% or something?
We're close enough to 100% at 0.3%. Okay.
Yeah, well, I cut a bit out. He said, if you're in an environment of 100% water, you'll die. And so, you know, he says, too much of anything's too much. And I said, well... We're not too much of carbon dioxide yet, but he claimed we are. He sort of seems to overlook the fact that if a person drops down unconscious from a heart attack or something, we can breathe our air into their lungs and revive them, and yet the air we breathe out is something like 20,000 parts per million as opposed to 400 parts per million that we normally breathe. So it can get pretty high before it gets toxic. I wouldn't actually know where it's toxic, but I know the U.S. Navy is regularly... monitored over 8,000 parts per million in its submarines, and they don't have any trouble coping with that. And an interesting point is that if people get trapped in a submarine, they don't die of carbon dioxide poisoning; they die of lack of oxygen first.
Yeah, they asphyxiate.
Yeah, exactly. So
let me get this straight.
Carbon's quite as toxic as some of these people would try and lead us to believe.
Well, the carbon must be toxic because we're built out of it, right?
Yeah, well, that's another really interesting thing. I wish I'd kept it. I must do a Google. Well, I don't know how fast I'll find it. But in Australia, they did a poll on carbon and how good it is. And there was a significant number of people that reckon that all food should be decarbonised. I kid you not, like it was over 10% thought that all food should be decarbonised. It shows you how poorly educated the system is, the people of the world are these days.
You know what this reminds me of?
They just feed this garbage and they just lap it up.
Neil, you know what this reminds me of? Dihydrogen monoxide. It's the number one cause of acid rain. It's it kills people every year. It's the number one cause of erosion. And, you know?
Yeah, I've dihydrogen seen that one monoxide. Too. And there were people... If you consume it, if you breathe it in, it kills you. Another one.
All right, so you go around and you say, can we ban dihydrogen monoxide? And it does all these things, and you know, 90% of people don't know what it is. And they're like, exactly. Oh, okay, sweet ass, we'll sign that, we'll ban it. They're banning water, right?
Exactly. So, well, I had to read it twice before I clicked what they were talking about when I first saw it anyway. I mean, it's pretty easy to trick people if you know what you're doing, and that's exactly what these people are doing. They tricked me for starters, as I said at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. You see the parallel now, don't you? It's so abundantly clear. They're tossing stuff in front of you that you don't know what it is and showing you all these bad symptoms and what have you, and then asking you to ban it. And in the meantime, all you're doing is proving how easily duped you are and how uneducated you are. This is not just confined to, I would say, other people and blah, blah, blah. It's everybody but me who's I'm uneducated. I don't know what all of this stuff does. I don't know how to build a weather satellite.
No. And this is where it sort of makes where the dots join up with other things. Like, I think it's getting pretty well out there now. Like climate change is not an end in itself. Well, global warming, as it was called, now it's called climate change, and or even catastrophic climate disruption, or something, is another term that gets all the bad weather, whether it's an extreme heat or an extreme cold, is blamed on carbon dioxide. Although I'm not quite sure how that works out, but it's all part of that's what we realise about. Well, Ian Wishart touches on it in his book, but it's connected up to all these other things. I heard you just mentioning Agenda 21 before you came over to me, and I mean, it's all part of that control thing, and take away all our rights and put them on Mr. Nanny State because it knows best.
Well, I've got to ask people who think that if the government's so nice and great and what have you, what's been their excuse for violating all your rights and stealing all your money thus far?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Have you been awake? You know. It's like you cannot write off brainwashing and mind control when you talk about this subject as well. I mean, if anybody thinks the media is not engaging in mass mind control, the naivety.
Well, the sad thing is so many people you hear on the mainstream media are saying that our side of the argument's getting too much airtime or paper space, depending on which media you're talking about. Like, it was several years ago, I tuned in very eagerly on a Sunday morning to national radio because they were going to have someone from the BBC talking about the need to bring balance to the climate change debate. And I thought, oh, this is good to hear. Well, blow me down, he wanted the non-global warming believers shut out because the science was totally settled. They shouldn't have any room at all. And this is the BBC.
Okay, and that is doublethink, classic doublethink. Okay, we want more freedom by censoring these people. Hold on.
Well, even Jeanette Fitzsimons asked, well, she's been gone, was our Greens leader for the benefit of those over the other side of the world, asked a question in Parliament. At that stage, there was quite a few of us writing letters into the farming papers that come out to the farmers. The farmers are the most enlightened in New Zealand, I think, on what's going on, because partly because we live in the climate, so we know it changes. But there was a fair bit of letters getting written into the farmers' papers and Jeanette Fitzsimons about climate change and why it's a load of rubbish, and Jeanette Fitzsimons asked the Minister of Agriculture what he was going to do to stop these papers publishing all this information. It was confusing and misleading the people of New Zealand.
Why didn't she do that to any of the media, major media outlets that have been misinforming and dodging people for years? I mean, let's take, for instance, just recently, we had this court case about the asset sales, and everybody was getting all up-de, whoop-de about it and what have you. And then suddenly, gay marriage is going to be legalized, and nobody's talking about that for a week or two while the court case is going. It's extraordinary. I mean, it seems like very... very cynical tactic here.
Yeah, what is it they do? I was surprised they didn't pass some major legislation while everybody was asleep watching the Olympics, because that's their standard trick, isn't it? You sort of bring in something and then you hide it over. You know, if it's something controversial, you sneak it in quietly while everybody's preoccupied. Well, even the
under
ETS,
urgency.
They called for submissions on the ETS when they first brought it in, the emissions trading scheme. Called for submissions just before they went on the Christmas recess. I was sitting waiting for it and thought, well, they're on the Christmas recess now, and hello, find out after New Year and all the holidays and things, oh, well, it's too late now, they're finished.
Oh, you got to love that.
Yeah.
I think it's like, here's the bar that you need to crawl over. You'll never be able to, and if you ever do get close, we're going to shift the bar.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you get to the point where the word frustration becomes a significant figure in your life. You know, it becomes like a brother or a parent or something like that. It becomes a big, big part of your life. And dealing with this frustration of liars, cheaters, thieves, being surrounded at it at all time when you seem to be the only one who's honest, honourable and brave. That is a frustrating state of affairs.
Yeah. Oh, the changing rules are sickening. Like, going back to Nick Smith, our former climate change minister, when he was in opposition, he had a thing opposing the Labor government, as it was then, wanting to bring all this in by saying it'll add to the cost, it'll add to inflation, it'll add to this, and it'll do absolutely nothing for the climate. Then, hey presto, a year or so later, he's the Minister of Climate Change, and although the emissions trading scheme was in by then, did he do anything about getting rid of it? No, he just tinkered around with it and slowed up the speed with which it comes in. And continuing with him, you know, when the economic situation was deteriorating, like they've always said, what the main reason they used for moderating the emissions trading scheme was not that it wasn't needed. It's just that since Labor passed it, as Labor was passing it, we had the global... It was after the global economic crunch. So therefore, we had to moderate its effect to protect our economy. And I sort of wrote a letter to him suggesting, well, maybe it should be moderated. We should delay it entirely because there's a few things changing in the science, and listed them. And his reply to me was, well, this is not the appropriate time to change the emissions trading scheme. We have a review due in 2011 in the science, and the economic situation will be visited then. Hello, come round to the time of the review. He specifically excludes looking at the science in that review. You know, the way they just shunt things around, like you say, to suit their own ends is sickening.
Yeah. And my girlfriend was telling me this the other day. It's like, what do you know? How can the scam work on that bigger scale? And so the scam hasn't evolved any. Okay, it's just been playing on a different field. It's no different from a snake oil salesman. One snake oil salesman goes into one town and he scams that whole town, takes all their money, and then walks out before they realize that it doesn't work at all. Okay,
yep.
That same scam multiplied. Okay, here we are selling the snake oil of climate change, and instead of just one man walking into one town, you have one newscaster who's broadcast all around the world, and then you have another newscaster, another and another and another and another, and before you know it, you've got a whole team of con men all playing part in the con, and they have no idea that they're part of a scam themselves.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably a fair sort of a comment. Like, you know, you look at these forestry companies and think they're going to make millions out of it. Well, even just while I was waiting for you to come on, the Coal Association's released an update of their New Zealand Coal Association, which has released an update of where they see climate change, and they're basically quite happy with what the government's doing with its proposed amendments to the ETS now, because it's sort of protecting the economy and not exposing them to the risk. But they're not actually coming out and saying, well, the whole thing's a load of rubbish, so why don't we just dump it all together? And they're sort of saying, you know, New Zealand's got to look good on the international stage with all these negotiations as to whether there will be or won't be a post-Kyoto agreement or a 2020 target or whatever. And I'm thinking, they're just playing along with this. Haven't they opened their eyes?
Well, when I interviewed Ian Wishart, he used to be up, well up in the media, as you know, Neil.
Yeah.
And he said, unequivocally, all, not just a few, most, of all the reporters are just airheads. They're actually not that bright at all. They know how to comb their hair, and they know how to accessorize with Gucci handbags and what have you. They know how to spend company money on drinks when they get free trips to Tahiti, etc. But not much else.
But you'd hope something like the Coal Association, that's a big business, would have its eyes a bit more open. Maybe that's why they're going.
Well, that's acting under the assumption that the coal companies have any idea that this is a scam run by a huge New World Order corporate fascist World Bank affiliated scum who own both sides of every argument and every major resource extraction operation anyway.
Yeah, you'd hope they might, but maybe they're too busy with their noses into what they're doing. And I think that is one of the problems, like even in our own farming thing. Like, I shouldn't sound like I'm picking on the Coal Association, because their own farming leaders aren't too good either.
All right,
maybe we'll get back to that after break.
Indeedy-doody, we will. All right. Neil Henderson is my guest, climaterealists.org.nz. We'll be right back on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest, Neil Henderson, joins us from his... are you in your farmhouse at the moment, mate?
Yep, that's correct.
Yep. And another thing that I wanted to talk about is actual the perspective of somebody who's a farmer is very different from the rest of the people because of the last 100-odd years of urbanization. People don't know what it's like to live on the land anymore. If you look back to the early Depression, and that was a time when, 90% of people lived in rural areas growing their own food, and still 10 million people starved to death in the U.S. during the Depression. Now, we have 90% of people living in cities, not knowing how to grow their own food, and only 10% of people on the land. And it's in Agenda 21 programs to get people the heck off the land, compress them into cities, to destroy the viability of farming, to dumb down the population so they have no idea what's going on. And I was watching Parliament TV one day, and allegedly Parliament's been passing 2 laws per day on average. And I don't know how many of those laws have you heard of, Neil, but I've heard of bugger all of them.
Yes, exactly. Didn't realise it was that many a day.
Yeah. And this is the thing. This is the point. You get legislation like...
There most of the time too, so I don't know how they pass much.
Well, that's true. That was what I was watching. I was watching Parliament TV. There were maybe 20 politicians out of the 160 or whatever. And it's the second reading, okay, to go through to the third reading before being passed, of the mandatory chipping of livestock bill. Every single cow has to be chipped as well as the cow farmer. Why? Because approximately 6 times a year, there are car accidents on rural New Zealand roads where cars slam into cattle that have been crossed along the road. And so naturally, let's chip every single cow in the entire country and every single farmer that's farming them so that we can monitor them on GPS at all time to keep those six car crashes every year from happening. And they passed it, the second reading. I didn't see what happened to the third reading. I don't know if it's law yet. What the? Are you kidding me? Are you fracking kidding? See,
insanity.
I'm not, man.
See this?
This was like last year, like in November.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've now made us chip all our cows, but not us yet. And that's another fight I'm fighting, but we better not start on that or we'll be way past our finish time.
Well, I don't know, man. If you want an extra hour, we can do it. I would like to, because I was just thinking, you know, when I asked you to come on the show, you were wondering, oh man, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours? And I thought, oh, maybe we can just do the 1 hour or something like that. But I think we've got a lot to talk about. But it depends
what your time schedule is. Lined up, I can stay. Yeah, quite happy.
Okay. I hope the studio's okay with that, because we got you on phone from the US, which can be a bit expensive for them. So I don't know. It'll be fine. I'm sure, because in the interest of good radio, let's keep talking about it, huh? Because this is something that I'm deeply concerned about is mandatory chipping, and it's like you get to the point where you think, if the end goal is to do something like, let's say, chip everybody. Or if the end goal is to say, let's say, put surveillance cameras in everywhere, all right, every room in your house, every street. What about speed cameras? All of that. Here's how you figure out that something's wrong. Here's how you figure out that something's wrong with what they're pushing on you. Firstly,
it's just the same slippery slope. Like when this electronic thing, chipping of our cattle first came in, it's only cattle at this stage. It was mandatory from the 1st of July. We're not allowed to send a cattle beast off our farm now if it's not got an electronic tag. So it's probably been talked about for about 5 years, I think. And when it first came in, it was going to make us lots of money because, you know, the markets of the world want traceability. They want to know their food is produced in environmentally sound and sustainable manners. So we were going to get this premium on our product by selling it. Well, if you go and take your McDonald's hamburger up to the counter, especially those in the US, I would say they'd be struggling to tell you what countries the meat in that hamburger came from, let alone what farm. But so that's the first thing.
Let alone how many cows.
What's that?
How many cows are in a paddy, Neil? There was a book called Fast Food Nation, in which they tested an average McDonald's beef patty to see how many parts of different cows are in it, and they estimated that it was thousands in a patty, thousands of different cows in one patty.
Yeah, well, I certainly know they don't all come from one country anyway. So that was where it started. But as usual, it's sort of slowly morphed into a thing that. Nebulous, well, if we don't do it, we're going to lose our trade access, and everybody else is doing it, so that's reason for us to jump off the cliff and be a lemming. They don't use that word, of course, but... and basically, it's come down to the fact that it's costing us an electronic tag over and above an ordinary tag that we used to use just for management purposes is the best part of $5, so it's not cheap. We pay a levy to cover the scheme on that tag of $1.45, I think it is off the top of my head. And then when the cattle beast is slaughtered, we pay another $2.10. I think it's, yeah, something like that. But I might be a bit wrong on this, but it's certainly over $2. So that means you don't need to be a rocket scientist to work out that they're charging about $3 to trace a cattle beast for its lifetime. Can you imagine how they must spend that money to track an animal for its lifetime, a lot of which stay on the same farm the whole time? So it's just another get-rich scheme for the bureaucrats, I think. And on top of that, the government's chipping in a bit of money too. I'm not sure why. But, yeah, we basically can't send our cattle anywhere. And just last night I sent off a submission. They've got the scheme up and running, but they haven't got all the bits and pieces in place yet. And they're calling for submissions on the regulations for enforcement. And they're proposing an education system for the first 12 months or so. But then... infringement fees, and they consider it a moderate infringement fee. Like if you forget to enter your cattle, forget to enter on the database that you've moved your cattle to another farm, sold them to someone else, the infringement fee they consider a moderate infringement fee is $150. Well, I mean, an instant speeding ticket of up to 10 kilometres an hour is $30, so I think they're on a different sort of a plane. And like you say, it's just more and more regulation, taking away our freedoms, controlling the food supply. This is it. For global government to come in, they need to control the money supply, the people, and the food production. They've got the first two, basically. So it's the farmers they've got to get, and like you say, lock as many of them up in towns as you can, have great big farms that were run by peasants on behalf of a corporation, and force the remaining farmers out of it by more and more red tape, basically, is what it is, isn't it? And I should point out, they keep telling us they're not going to bring sheep in. They're not going to bring sheep in until the majority, until the farmers ask for it. But they're working away with their just sort of propaganda, I suppose, and showing you how good it is if you have these ID, electronic ID tags in your sheep, how, you know, it's much easier for you to manage them. You can keep monitor their weights that much easier and things. And they're slowly getting a few people to get sucked in, people who aren't aware of the ulterior motive that they're being groomed for. And it's only a matter of time, and I'm sure within 3 years they'll be getting us to tag our sheep. So a $5 rear tag on a sheep that currently isn't worth $100 is starting to get very expensive sounding, and a good way of making sure that sheep farming is uneconomic.
Yeah. And the whole idea is basically to have, well, I don't know, every form of freedom in life either reduced or destroyed. That seems to be the general scheme of things, you know? It's either going to be, and particularly, this is the big crux, wiping out forms of independence, any kind of independence. You're capable of producing your own food? No, food bill. Okay, it's going to be illegal to grow your own food, and we'll have men with guns that will come on your property and point them at you if you're trying to grow anything. That's the future. Okay, and same with energy independence. If you come up with some water fueled car or whatever, and you start driving around with it, mate, you'll go missing. All right,
yeah.
It happens. It happens more often than people would ever be terrified enough to believe. This is what the agenda is: to make everybody completely and utterly dependent on the system, an inescapable, irresistible force that will dominate and control all of mankind's actions forever. Okay. Really? Holy Shiite Muslim balls.
The next thing that's just starting to rear its head again, and I thought it had been put to bed fairly well, is genetic modification here in New Zealand. Like, I know the United States has got it lots, but it's still banned here for the benefit of over there. And they're bringing it up again. And I'm absolutely stunned to find that our levy-funded organisation is actually funding an organisation that's doing research on genetically modified grasses, even though we're not allowed to sow them, and a lot of us don't actually want them. And, I mean, that's yet another way of, you know, the seed companies own those cultivars, and if you plant them, you've got to pay them a levy, and if they escape over the fence into the neighbours can potentially be charged for having this grass on their farm without a licence, and stuff. And our farming leaders are sort of saying, well, if we don't do that, well, there's been a delegation. I haven't actually got the Farming Weekly this week yet, but I've seen the headlines being advertised, and they've had some people over from the United States, including some senior official from the vice chairman of DuPont, saying, well, if you guys don't allow GE grasses onto your farm, you're going to get left behind. But hey, I don't mind getting left behind. It sounds like a good idea.
All right, we'll be right back with Neil Henderson. Thanks for giving us an extra hour of your time, Neil, at such short notice as well. This can be good. All right, coming back to it, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be talking about your freedoms and how they're under attack and what have you, and how morons who think that they're really important and think that their evidence is correct and won't look at your evidence to debunk it seem to think that they're absolutely fantastic and they can do no wrong. It's called government, and it's called proto-psychopathy. Gotta love it. We'll be right back. Virus, alert the masses. and one for all, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The first is 2 hours in talk radio, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and scumbaggery mofos who are just basically trying to pass progressive legislation to eventually take away all your rights, liberty and property, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest at the moment is Neil Henderson from climaterealist.org.nz. And later on, I was also hoping to bring on my good friend Penny Bright for a little bit of a quick update on the asset sales and stuff like that towards the end of this hour. So, Neil, we were talking about the chipping and what have you with the cows. And I was just wondering, are these beef cattle, or is it specifically just milking cattle that
it's all cattle, beef and dairy.
Okay.
And as for March
here's my
year,
problem
it'll
with
also
that.
Be all deer, all farm deer.
Now, it's down in Agenda 21, they want all organisms, domestic or wild. They're just doing it one bit at a time so people don't notice sanity of it. They've even been catching salmon in Canada and chipping each salmon as they come up the stream and stuff like that. And they found these enormous, just, and we're talking millions upon millions of these chips going into these fish and caught by hand and what have you. Just extraordinary expense. And what happens to a lot of these fish? Well, they wind up getting eaten by bears, who wind up eating these chips and excreting them all over the place. You know? It's just, they found these shiny islands, right, allegedly. You know, a little kind of grassy sand hill on a river or something like that, covered in all of these just hundreds of thousands of these chips. Just unbelievable. These people are insane. Completely insane. Think about what about radio signals and all of that stuff that comes out of them and stuff like that? Doesn't that cause cancer? Is it good for you to eat cancerous beef?
Yeah, well, the chips they're using here aren't giving out a radio signal all the time. It's got to wait till it's been woken up by a transmitter, apparently, but all the same. And it's not, our ones aren't actually implanted into the beast. I must admit, when I first heard about it, I thought that was going to be the case, but they're actually in an ear tag that you hang on the ear. But it's still pretty close.
Oh, well, that's a great way to just get people into it very slowly, you know? Maybe
this
have a tag
true.
In our ear,
yeah,
not
true.
Suited.
I've asked them how long before it changes to something else, and they say, oh, no, it's not planned. Yeah, well, it's not planned, no, but if anybody went for a night raid through their offices, what would we find?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what should be done, Watergate style, you know? Is there a Woodward and Bernstein out there very keen to just kind of crack open the case like happened at Climategate?
Well, I haven't heard of anything yet, but no, there's a few farmers. The trouble is our farming leaders are sort of, I don't know, whether they've been bought. I have no illusions that our government doesn't govern the country, but I do just wonder sometimes whether our elected farming leaders sort of get told to toe the line. We have the odd one that, like our last Federated Farmers President, was willing to speak out, but the current one sort of talk about we need this new spirit of collaboration. Well, I immediately thought of collaboration. That's what people get convicted of in wartime, for collaborating with the enemy, isn't it? I don't know what's going on. Like, I mean, they like this idea of being politically correct, but whether they're sort of aware of the bigger picture, you know, have they been sucked into it? You know, we need to do this, like going back to the climate change, but again, you know, the levies that we farmers compulsorily pay every time we have a sheep or a cattle be slaughtered at the meat processing thing, is being used to look for a solution to methane emissions from our livestock. Well, excuse me, is it a problem? And this is it. We a group of farmers who are also opposing what's going on approached our meat levy organisation last year, and they invited me to come along with them. We tried to get $50,000 or somewhere thereabouts just to sort of look at the literature and investigate the science to actually define what the problem was before we go finding a solution. They couldn't find that money, but they've been able to find over $1 million to look for a solution to this problem that hasn't yet been defined. I mean, it's crazy. Why are they wanting to be so politically correct and look like they're all part of finding a solution to this problem that most farmers know doesn't exist, and even some of them know doesn't exist?
Well, the ultimate question is whether or not it's better to be correct or politically correct.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And that's basically it, yeah. They put their integrity on the line to be politically correct, and I just find that very difficult to swallow. Like, you can be wrong and sincerely wrong because you believe it. Well, that's different. Someone who genuinely believes in global warming, I have a lot more respect for than these ones that say they go along with it, but underneath they don't. That is immoral.
Now, this is something that I wanted to also get into, morality. It seems that this is a, something that's kind of waned somewhat in the last, 50 years. I think it took about 50 years for everybody to have kind of respect for their elders and family units and communities together and stuff like that, to everybody huddling in their own little apartment in the middle of the city, not knowing their neighbours and not communicating with anybody and barely even their family. I think it's taken about that much, right?
Yeah. I even think it might have taken
effort.
A little less.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it's been that way for a while, and now it's evolving into something even worse. And what I find is interesting here is the dose of morality in Christianity. I mean, would you classify yourself as sort of semi-Christian, like sharing some of the Bible beliefs?
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely call myself Christian, yep.
Oh, okay, because I was just thinking, you know how everybody says, oh, there's two types of Christians, or there's two types of business people, or there's two types of blah, 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 blah. But yes, there's billions of types. But yeah. What I've noticed is archetypes. One is the onward Christian soldier archetype that takes their morality seriously, usually lives quite humbly, and attempts to better the world around them in just the ways that they can, and in believing in their own capacity. The second type is what I call hypocristians, who have the same beliefs, allegedly, but they don't back up any of those beliefs with actions. They go to the church every Sunday, but they're not standing up against evil. They're not ensuring their community's survival. They're not becoming leaders. They're not funding projects in the community and such like that. They are not engaged.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be classified as being in the second group. I hope I'm not. But that's for other people to judge. That's it. Mm-hmm. I'd like to stand up for the truth. And like I say, we can get the truth wrong sometimes, but I can respect someone who gets the truth wrong so long as they sincerely believe what they believe.
There's a great quote, when an honest man discovers that he is wrong, he will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest.
Yeah. Well, there's a quite often a quote comes true. I think it's attributed to Maynard Keynes or something, but some people dispute whether he was the one. When the truth changes, I change my opinion. What do you do, sir?
Yeah. But my favourite of all quotes, basically of all time, is from Winston Churchill. He's walking around town and he's real drunk. And this old woman comes up to him. She goes, "Mr. Churchill, you're drunk." And he goes, "Yes, madam. And you're ugly. And tomorrow I'll be sober."
Yes, I've heard that one too.
and I think it's like this. Despite the fact that you might have people who are attacking you, despite the fact that you might have a war to fight on your hands, it doesn't mean you can't have fun.
No.
Mm-hmm. And people forget that to go out the camera, ambush some climate change pushing no equivocal evidence that they're not a paid member of the servant of the system or whatever, you know, like a climate change minister. Obviously, this guy's connected with the World Bank. Guys connected with the Council on Foreign Relations, blah, 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 blah. You know, that kind of stuff becomes pretty obvious when you see the groups that these people belong to. And what I'm concerned about is people don't realise that it's not actually that scary going up to these scum and calling them on their BS. It is of immense enjoyment. And have you ever watched a YouTube video Neil, of somebody else ambushing a scumbag and they're armed with unequivocal information and just totally dominate them? And have you ever watched it and just thought and just laughed your ass off at how much they owned that person? Imagine if you were that person who was owning them. Imagine how enjoyable it is. This is what it's like. This is what it's all about, everybody. I keep trying to tell you. There's only one rule on this show. It's to have fun. It's because if you're vanquishing your enemy, you want it to be a positive experience, don't you?
Yeah. Well, one of the best YouTube things I've watched is Lord Monckton talking to that Greenpeace person in just before the Copenhagen meeting.
Oh, my God, that was so good.
He did that beautifully, and he did it gracefully, and she just had nowhere to go. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, see, in an argument, you very rarely have something to fear from somebody who's just attacking you and knows nothing.
Yeah. The biggest trouble with the global warming one, they come back to the thing, well, what if we're right and you're wrong? And that's, you know, it's some sort of special kind of argument, the name of which I can't reply, can't recall.
Well, here's how you reply. I got an idea, and you just made me think of it now. Okay, I believe that if you jump off a bridge, you won't die. What if I'm right? We should all jump off the bridge anyway. Just on the chance that I might be right.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
The argument I've been using until now is, well, you still got to weigh up the cost. Like, I mean, if the insurance company came along to you and told you that the premium for insuring your house against a fire is 20% of its value per year, you're not going to insure your house against fire, because I hope you don't live somewhere where the arsonists are so bad that you get it burnt down every 5 years. I mean, so this is it. And this is what's becoming patently clear. The cost of dealing with climate change, even if it is caused by humans, is far greater than just living with the climate. And going back to the other thing is, which is so obvious, but you never hear it, who's to say that the climate we live in now is the best one? It's not a warmer climate. I mean, I have contact with some people in Romania through an organization I deal with. The poor beggars there live through the winter at a temperature that never rises above -6 degrees all day. -6 degrees Celsius, that is. I mean, aren't they entitled to have a bit of warmth?
Well, yeah, and
that brings us back to that moral issue again. Who is it to say that the climate we've got now is the best? Okay, if it gets a bit warmer, it might be a bit more uncomfortable for some, but it'll be a lot more comfortable for others. And who is the person who has the right to say what that level should be, whether we're warming the climate or whether it's warming naturally?
Yeah, and are they taking the Earth's rotation into account here? Because the pole shift into account here, because the poles are migrating, man. So wherever the equator is, that's where the bulk of the sun will come, and that just keeps moving, and it has been consistently for quite some time now. So what are they going to do? They say, oh, well, it's really, really extra cold in England now, but now Antarctica is habitable, you know, that kind of thing. It's just like, look, in my life, this is just me personally, Neil, I don't know about you, but I deal with the crap that's in front of me, right in front of me, the stuff that I got the evidence, the stuff that I can actually do something about, the stuff that I actually have the capacity to change.
Yeah,
I don't worry about things that I cannot change. For example, some people talk about the end of the world until December 21st, 2012. I don't have an ark in my possession, so I'm fracked anyway. So I'm not going to do anything about it. Which, you know, that's my attitude, man. Can I do anything about it? No. All right, some dude says the moon's artificial. Okay, great. Produces a whole bunch of evidence. Okay, moon's artificial. What does it change in my daily life? Nothing. So who cares?
Nothing. No, that's right. You've got to pick on things that you think you can influence. That's probably why we've got into this, and we hope we can wake people up. Even like I say, we can't change the climate, so why are we arguing about it? Why are we pretending we can?
Yeah, and that's something that I think it was Oscar Wilde said, everybody talks about the weather, when is anybody going to do something about it?
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Speaking of which, now we have chemtrails all over the place. And the recent film, Why in the World in Their Spraying, just come out, and they've produced some extremely compelling evidence that there is geoengineering going on all over the planet, and that weather control is one of the chief objectives of this. They're capable, you know how when you've got a piece of metal or something, you just hit it with sunlight, that metal heats up, right?
Yep.
And let's say you've got a lot of metal, a lot of small metal particulates that are sprayed in an area that all absorb the heat from the sun. You create an artificial anticyclone, don't you?
Right.
That's precisely what they're doing. They're just spraying it in the path of oncoming storms to either push them back, or they're spraying them behind storms to get them up, and a whole bunch of other things as well. It's an extraordinary documentary, and the fact that it's actually rudimentary science like that has dawned on me. The expense of geoengineering, of literal weather control, literally playing God and everything like that, is actually cheap. You could control global weather for like $14 billion or something. No.
Yeah.
Sorry. The control the United States weather. Okay. The whole weather of the United States, you could basically have it under your control for $14 billion a year. Okay. And the amount of food that you can destroy with a storm, or the amount of food that you can save by averting a storm and stuff like that, that's a huge onflow effect. Now, who ever thought that it would be so dangerous to play God, eh?
Yeah.
Because all of the side effects that these geoengineers have said about soil toxicity, about respiratory problems, about this, that, and the other, are all happening.
That's it. I think there's a lot of stuff going on we don't dream about. I must admit, I was fairly cynical about these chemtrails for a start, and I'm still not totally sold on it, but yeah, I've heard of that DVD you just talked about, and we've actually got it on order, and up to it might be far away.
Well, let's hope you get it into first. And also, Neil, we want to be joined by my good friend Penny Bright in the next segment, and I think you'll like her too, so hang on there. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tino Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print $100 and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan but don't print the interest. So there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get?
There will never be enough money to pay off all the debt, ladies and gentlemen. Even the justification of selling our assets in order to do so is absolutely insane, because they deliver dividends to people all the time. Infrastructure, ladies and gentlemen, is the World Bank plan. It's the motto to take over people's countries by reducing their ability to provide their own infrastructure. That's what's going on here with asset sales. Neil, we've still got you on the line here, and we're now joined by the fabulous and illustrious and very dangerous Her Worship, Penny Bright. Welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny.
Okay, so Penny, I wanted to get your take on this, the asset sales and where they are up to right now with this court case delaying them.
Well, what happened was on Monday, the 3rd of September, here were four of us having a protest outside the offices of Mercury Energy, which is 100% owned by Mighty River Power, and that was the first of the electricity assets that the government wanted to sell this year. And we hear the great news that this sell-off has been delayed. So we were absolutely thrilled about that, because what we've been trying to do is to throw a spanner in the works by encouraging people to take the action which cannot be ignored. We're trying to encourage 100,000 people to switch off Mercury Energy. And in so doing, what that will do is cause Mighty River Power, who owns Mercury Energy, it'll cause their profits to fall, and thus will help make this investment very unattractive. And there is precedent for this, because back in 2008, 1988, at a time of financial downturn, Contact Energy, which was already privatised, they doubled directors' fees and they put the prices up 12%. Well, what happened was in 6 months, over 40,000 customers left Contact Energy and their profits were halved. So what we're doing is absolutely doable. And as someone who's more involved in civil disobedience actions like rates, revolts and water bill boycotts, I have to have a bit of a chuckle to myself that this is actually a state-sanctioned activity, because every 5 minutes when you watch on TV, there are advertisements encouraging people to do exactly what we're encouraging people to do, which is effectively to use the market against the market model.
Well, isn't that called a free market?
Well, what's hilarious is that when you take natural monopolies such as the supply of electricity and water, natural monopolies, when you try to introduce this competitive model, all it does in actual fact is duplicate resources, which puts the price up. Now, back in the bad old inefficient days, and of course inefficient is just corporate speak for we haven't yet got our filthy hands on it, back in the days there was a Department of Electricity and there were power boards. And of course this was inefficient because like I say, they didn't have their filthy hands on it. So what happened was there was this division made between electricity generation, transmission, distribution and retail. So they chopped it up into four different parts and then they subdivided each of those parts again into different competing companies. Well, you're each with their own, you know, board of directors and officers and God knows what. And it's just a no-brainer. Because, of course, the only thing that did was to massively put the price up. Because back in the bad old inefficient days, I tell you what, you could afford to have the heater on in winter and you could afford to have a soak and a hot bath. Well, you can't now.
No, you literally can't. And similar stuff has happened in Australia. One of my listeners, Glenn, he's on holiday here in New Zealand at the moment. I met up with him when he landed. And his funny story, Penny, he tells me about his electricity prices, and he goes, oh, they're about $2.50 a quarter or $7.50 a quarter. So it's about $250 a month, $250 Australian dollars. And I go, oh my God, that's pretty insane. I mean, but maybe, you know, when we've had the heater on during the winter and stuff like that, yeah, we could get up to that. And he goes, yeah, but I've got gas heating, and that's only two, and that's really cheap. It's only $2.50 a quarter. It's just like it goes from bad to worse. And that's after John Howard privatised their electricity companies in South Australia. Well, same thing will happen here.
Well, the fact of the matter is that privatisation does put the price up, because of course you've got shareholders to look after, and the sensible thing to do is to keep essential public services under the essential public service model, which is not profit making. As soon as you start commercialising essential public services, running them on a profit making basis, which of course the state owned enterprises are, they're under the commercialised model, and I mean we're still being ripped off blind under the state-owned enterprise model, but when you privatise it, then those profits, then they go offshore, which is arguably even worse. But my considered opinion is get back to what we used to have, because it wasn't bloody broken in the first place. Bring back the electricity and bring back power, because it wasn't broken. But as far as what else is happening with the asset sales, very, very interesting that... that the government is backing off, and there's no doubt about it. The more the government's very poll driven, and so part of our what I want to see happening over the next few months, now that we have a little bit more time, is to really focus on Shonky John Key, because the fortunes of the National Party are very much joined at the hip with the fortunes of the New Zealand Prime Minister, ex Wall Street bankster John Key, who's been the most stage-managed, packaged, spin-doctored person I've ever come across in my life. And what's happening is the mask is starting to fall and people are actually starting to guess that John Key's not actually really here to look after New Zealand mums and dads. He's actually still a Bank of America shareholder. He's got huge connections with his bankster mates. He's opening up New Zealand to overseas investors. Banks, that whose interest he's serving. So wakey, wakey, folks. Yeah, so what we want to do is to...
Just jumping in, I can't understand why the National Party can't see that.
Well, you know, there's a brainwashing thing going on again, and that groupthink mentality. I had a couple of truthers drop around today. You know, just trying to sell me new power companies or new or donate to charities and what have you. And they saw my car with the stickers all over, and they go, "Hey, mate, are you in a conspiracy theorist?" Oh my God, thank God, you know. And he said to him, "Oh, you know, I'm part of this organization or I'm part of that organization." I said, "Dude, if you belong to somebody else, to another organization, it means that you belong to that organization, okay? You don't own yourself anymore. You don't have your own opinions. You don't have any of this. You have to do whatever the party line is. Same goes for whatever business you're working for. Same goes for whatever organizations you align yourself with. If anybody in that organization says anything, you know, you kind of have to back it." And those with mainstream thought and who don't expose themselves to the kind of information that we bring out on this show, who believe what the corporate media says, that kind of thing, it has of no surprise to me whatsoever that these people would not see through John Key, and indeed would think that anything that he says is absolutely in line with National Party policy, is in line with how it was founded, and blah, 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 because he's our leader, our dear leader.
Well, what I'd really like to encourage people to do at all times is presume nothing, check everything, and always seek truth from facts. And if you're looking to seeking truth from facts, always go to source. Now, a very simple thing that I did with dear old Shonky John Key, I double-checked, because back in November 1999, John Key, he was a foreign exchange advisor to the New York Federal Reserve. And at that time, you know, knew all the stuff, Vinny, but others may not. But he was also head of derivatives, dodgy derivatives, for Merrill Lynch. Well, what happened in November 1999 was the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. And, of course, the Glass-Steagall Act had been around since 1933 under Roosevelt. And it effectively put this big concrete wall between what was regarded as sort of safe and boring commercial banking versus risky and dangerous investment banking. Well, there had holes had started to appear in that concrete wall, but with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, that came down completely, and the effect of that was to leave derivatives completely unregulated. And of course, the reason why we've got such a disaster now financially is the collapse of the derivatives market. So what I want to know is, while John Key was in that pivotal position at that pivotal time, what role did he play in the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act? How much is John Key personally responsible for this financial global meltdown? And I want that question asked in Parliament. I want one of the MPs to grow some balls, or maybe it'll be a woman, I don't know. But,
I think it's far more likely that the women will grow balls of their politicians. Kellen Clark. Helen Clark's got balls, man. I mean, seriously, she hides them in her Adam's apple.
Anyway, but just another couple of things about to deal with what's happening with asset sales. As far as water is concerned, I mean, I've been media spokesperson for the Water Pressure Group. A media spokesperson back since 1998, and I've been quite involved in this issue. And people need to beware, because what the government wants to do is to set up a market in tradable water rights. You know, well, hello, we know how the markets work for electricity, disaster. We know how the market has worked for finance, disaster. We need a market and tradable water rights, like we need a hole in the head. Because the issue is, you've got a river flowing, and then what happens is you've got farmers want to draw water off for irrigation, you've got industries that want to use water, you've got communities that want water, you know, for drinking water, etc. And the question is, who gets to access or to use that water in a fair and sustainable way? Because in New Zealand, it comes under the Resource Management Act, and it's sort of like first in, first served, and it's a bit messy. But, I mean, the whole country has a real concern, or is going to be impacted upon by this issue. It's not just an issue for Māori. The issue of property rights for water affects every person in this country. We all need to be part of the debate, and National was never elected with any sort of mandate on a market for tradable water rights. And they didn't actually get a mandate for asset sales either. Because guess what? Do the math. There was 121 MPs. How many MPs did National get who campaigned on asset sales? They got 59. It was a vote of 61 to 60 that got the Mixed Ownership Model Act through, which allows for these asset sales. National had to have John Banks from ACT. They had to have Peter Dunn from United Future, or they wouldn't have been able to get the legislation through. So no majority, in my very clear opinion, is no mandate.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. And from the farming perspective, you talked about water rights and resource management. Neil, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, that's a nice curly question. Well, our own district council's busy starting to draw up its plans for its rivers and things. And yeah, I agree it's an issue we've got to look at, and because, you know, we've got to fairly allocate what's there. But it's yet another way for the spin doctors to sort of infiltrate and doctor the program up so that we end up having more and more controls. And I mean, it is at least one that I think the farmers are going into with their eyes open a bit better than some of the others at this stage. But there's, you know, it's a huge can of worms, and we're certainly watching it closely. All part of the picture.
But wouldn't you agree that this debate, that's the whole of New Zealand that needs to be consulted with on this one, not just Māori, not just select groups. Like they've been having these little forums to do with the issue of tradable water rights. Well, arguably the biggest stakeholder of the lot's the public. But of course, where are we involved in this? Hello?
Yeah, that was something that really irritated me. That was something that really irritated me as well, Penny. It's like, I'm not Māori, so I don't get consulted about what happens with my water. Penny, you're not Māori. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no. The thing is that, in terms of the view that nobody owns water, I totally agree that water is a commons. Every species depends on water to live. But the question is, how do you get access to it in a fair way? And the other huge issue, in terms of control and managing water in a sustainable way, why the hell do we use rivers as liquid tips? Why do we put poos and wees into the river? Why do we put discharge from industries and God knows what into the water? Why on earth do we use water supply as liquid tips? That's, hello, and we do that in New Zealand. Waikato River, when I did a lot of research, hundreds of hours of research way back in about 2003, there are about 2,300 point discharges where like the Resource Management Act, sort of like a license to pollute. You get, you get a consent to be able to put this muck in the water. So there were like 2,300 point discharges where you could add crap in the river. But of course, then you have runoff off the roads, runoff off the farms. Hello.
Yeah, it's a big can of worms, isn't it? Right, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com here with Penny Bright and Neil Henderson. Back in a few minutes. Divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to the Vinnie the final segment, and we have Neil Henderson still with us. Neil, I wanted to kind of get something personally from you. I mean, look, there's a whole bunch of scary stuff to this climate change debate. Has anything about it kind of made you kind of like, I don't know, almost wet your pants?
Well, not totally. We're sort of well aware we're up against the wolves, and I sort of wonder whether our internet access is all being monitored by Big Brother and watching us. But hey, like I said earlier on, we've got to do what we can. We believe it's wrong, so yeah, we just sort of don't. We just take a big breath and sort of, well, God's bigger than us, so if we're meant to do it, we're meant to do it. But yeah, no, I'm quite happy to stand up against things and not sort of too frightened yet. I haven't been threatened to be beaten up by Greenpeace protesters or anything yet, but I must admit we did sort of hire some security guards when we had Ian Wishart in Gisborne, and just in case, because at that stage Nick Smith had been doing some roadshows publicising the things, and Greenpeace was sort of dominating the meeting, and if anyone dared stand up against them, they'd sort of drown them out. So yeah, but no, other than that, we're sort of just trusting and hoping and praying, but we're sort of be sticking our neck out on the line a bit further, sort of early next year, possibly March, because we've Lord Christopher Monckton is coming back to Australia, and he's going to tag New Zealand on to the end of the tour, and this time we've got lots of time to organise, so we're planning on taking him from Kaitaia to Invercargill, so we'll certainly be plenty of room for the greenies to get us over that one.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of Lord Monckton, we had a comment earlier in the program on Facebook by Max saying that Lord Monckton is not a lord. At least that's what the House of Lords says, but he just opens his passport and it says Lord Monckton, Viscount of Benchley. Okay, that's what it says on his passport. You can't claim that he's not a lord. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'd have to go back.
Look, if I showed you my passport, Neil, and I said, I'm Vinny Eastwood, and I show you a passport that says Vincent Eastwood, you'd have to say, okay, he is Vincent Eastwood, isn't he? That's called identification. If I say I'm a lord, and it says Lord Vincent Eastwood, Viscount of Scumbaggery, you'd have to concede that, yes, I'm the Viscount of Scumbaggery.
Well, I'm wondering whether, I saw that one the other day too, someone bringing up that thing about him being the Lord. I'm wondering whether they're still going back to the old thing where they, just before he came to New Zealand last year, which has been ruled out of order. It was just some overzealous left-wing person who wanted to make something out of it, and the House of Lords has actually upheld his thing that he is a Lord. So I'd have to check exactly what source they're using. Like we were just told now, you know, you check everything you get.
Because in the Guardian,
they're using stuff that's been discredited.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this comes straight out of the Guardian newspaper in the UK that he showed me the article to. So it's like, okay, go ahead and trust your mainstream media, buddy. They never lied to you yet, have they? Right?
No.
Okay, and this is the interesting thing, because I went to a skeptics society meeting with my sister once, and they were talking about GMOs and blah, 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 blah. And overall, the presenter is just this young chick who's in university. It's like, obviously, people who are young and in university, they know everything about the world and geopolitics and genetic engineering. So she just goes on to talk about how everything's great, blah, blah, blah. And I mentioned that they don't serve genetically modified food in Monsanto cafeterias. They're not allowed to.
And, what a hypocrisy.
Well, yeah. And one of the chicks there Googles it, okay, and she comes up with beforeitsnews.com and all these other things. She goes, we're the Skeptic Society, okay? These sources are not credible. And I go, oh, yeah, I forgot. Skeptics are only trust mainstream media, because that's where applying your skepticism just kind of doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
Well, likewise,
they just dismiss you because that's you. Well, is that if you bring up something that the Arctic's not really melting any more than usual, and you quote some website such as What's Up With That? Oh, well, they immediately write that off because that's a climate denialist website. It's the same thing, isn't it?
And of course,
it doesn't matter that it might be a fact. It's just because it's in the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I'm talking about, you know. All facts have to come from these alleged sources that are all credible and stuff like that. It's just like, well, dude, you know, do your research on somebody to find out whether or not they're credible first before you start basking about their credibility, because otherwise you ain't got any either.
No. And just because someone's not credible on one issue might mean that doesn't mean they're wrong on everything, because that's one thing that gets up my nose about this Naomi Oreskes with her Merchants of Doubt or something as their book. You know, because a couple of the people who are prominent in the climate debate happened to believe that smoking was all right, well, that means all of us happen to get branded with that brush. Well, I mean, I don't have any problem with saying that smoking's bad for the health, so where does that put me?
It's
not a very logical argument somehow. I presume if you looked around for long enough, you'd probably find some people who believe in global warming that also believe that cigarette smoking's all right. I mean, it's a crazy argument, but
I have personally witnessed Greenpeace members smoking cigarettes. I kid you not.
Oh, well, therefore, I suggest by inference they believe it's harmless then.
obviously. You know, everything's so cut and dry. And that's what capturing the moral high ground is about. You know, in the end, everything comes back to the beginning. We're actually the ones with the moral high ground, and what they're trying to do is claim that we're the bad baby killers and we're endless polluters, that kind of stuff. It's just not the case.
Exactly.
They're just making humanity the enemy. No difference to displacements when somebody gets really bossed around by their boss at work and they come home angry and then yell at their wife about something. It's no different.
Yeah.
And when you're on the road and you're hosting these conferences and stuff like that, and you're talking about the climate debate, are there any elements of the climate debate that you leave out with perhaps new audiences and stuff like that, because it might be a bit too much at this point?
Yeah, well,
any broader, scarier implications that you just kind of don't really talk about or try to avoid in the conferences unless they come up?
Well, not anymore, I don't think, because it's getting out enough there now. Like, this is when we brought Ian Wishart to Gisborne, that was it. I was a bit wary about introducing this one world government, and then, well, at that stage I didn't know the word Agenda 21. I hadn't quite caught up on that myself, and I said, I'm not sure whether people are ready for this, but Ian Wishart took it, and it's just amazing how many people came up afterwards, and they totally knew the picture. You know, it was good to hear, like, hear it out in the open was their comments, and so no, we're not too fazed by it. If it turns a few people off, well, but it wakes a few more up, well, I think it's worth doing.
Yeah, well, just think about
like
this.
Your chemtrails. I'm a bit ambivalent on that one still, but we put it out there, and you know, if it helps some people put the dots together, well, good on it.
Yeah, well, we come together on the points we agree. And leave the rest for another time. Perhaps a time we can debate them safely without the risk of being enslaved and exterminated by criminal government.
Yeah. that might happen sooner than later. Like, I mean, that's really one of the things that's on our side at the moment, is we've got all the internet access that we can bing things around all over the place. But I wonder how long before they close that down, because the mainstream media, as you mentioned earlier, it's cultivating the views of the majority. And the internet is the only way that we can sort of get widespread coverage. And how long before they're making noises about controlling it? And it's a bit scary, really. Like, we're going to have a very difficult time airing alternative viewpoints after that.
Yeah, and this is why I don't think people should have centralized platforms of getting their media. You know, everybody should have their own website. Everybody should have their own radio show, their own YouTube channel, their own this, their own that, and the other. Okay, and then they should collaborate with people who have bigger ones, and so on and so forth. So that way, it ties us all together, and yet it also keeps us all separate and completely independent. And that way, we won't be able to be destroyed or taken down, or at least that's the hope that I have. And if anybody wants to be mentored into radio or how to put a website together, or just wants to start off and you don't know how to do it, you know, just flick me an email or something. I can give you a few tips of how I did it. And none of it will work for you, I can guarantee you, because you're not me.
Yeah.
But I can guarantee you the one thing that will work is actually getting out and doing something instead of sitting around talking about it.
Absolutely. No, that's it. We need, there's no good sitting home. That was the frustrating thing right back at the beginning when I was talking to these farmers. They don't want this ETS thing to come in, but they don't want to do too much to stop it. And it's the old thing, isn't it? Apathy, the government's governing on apathy. We just talked about asset sales. Well, I mean, the majority of people are against them, but the government's still doing it because there's not enough people are willing to get off their chuffs. But that's the trouble. There's so many things to get off our chuffs for, we run out of days to do it.
Yeah, and I've always said that it's one person who sacrifices everything to get the job done will get the job done a hell of a lot faster, more effectively, by themselves, with no support of any kind, than 100 people who choose to try and help each other and try to ask other people to lead them the way and try to do this and try to do that.
Do or do not. There is
yeah,
no try.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's the individuals are going to make the difference. Well, I've already been told by two people that if we ever get rid of the ETFs in New Zealand, it won't be because of the farming organisations and various lobby groups. It'll be the lone rangers like us that are out there taking one pot shot here and one pot shot there.
Yep, we're going to make that beast bleed out. Thanks, Neil.
Thank you very much.
For coming on the show. Yeah, freaking awesome, man. I can't believe you thought you wouldn't be able to stick around for 2 hours. That's why I like activists, ladies and gentlemen. They're real humble people, and that's why I like to give them the coverage that they deserve, because often they're too humble to come up and ask you themselves, and they deserve it. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Neil. climaterealists.org.nz, ladies and gentlemen. And if you know an activist, or if you know a commentator or somebody who you think deserves a bit more coverage than they're currently getting, flick us an email through the VinnieEastwoodShow.com's contact page, and I can guarantee you I'll send them a request. Whether or not they come on, it's up to them. It's about personal choice, personal freedom. We'll be seeing you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.